Good afternoon. My name is Dan Steinbauer. I am the chair of the Underhill Select Board. And this is our regular Select Board meeting for October 6th, 2020. And this is a meeting in remote, authorized as qualifying the open meeting law through Act 92 of the legislature and the governor's emergency order. We will start with introductions. And before we start, I want to welcome Donna Griffiths, who is our new recorder. And so we welcome you, Donna, to our meeting. And if in introductions, we can start with the Select Board members and then members of the town staff and then members of the public. And especially if you want to speak at the meeting, it is important to introduce yourself. Carry on.
I'm Bob Stone. I'm on the Underhill Select Board.
I'm Peter Duval. I'm on the Select Board.
I'm Jim B.B. Woodard, and I'm the Town Administrator.
I'm Sherry Moore, Town Clerk and Treasurer.
Jennifer Silpe, Town Finance Officer.
Kurt, you are muted.
Kurt Johnson, I chair the Highway Committee.
And members of the public, or Donna, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Donna. Can I ask you guys one favor? I'm mostly going to be looking at my Word document where I'm typing instead of GoToMeeting. So since I don't recognize anyone's voices yet, it might be hard for me to tell who's talking. So if you guys could try to just maybe mention who you are when you start talking, or if you make a motion, if someone could just kind of confirm who it was that made and seconded the motion, that would be helpful to me.
That's fair.
Thanks.
Members of the public. Or people who are a part of other agencies that are featured speakers tonight.
My name is Chris Bernier. I'm an Underhill town resident. And I am here to listen about the plan for the early planning for River Road and to just make a public comment about pedestrian access in town.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marshall Distel, and I'm a transportation planner with the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission. I'm here for the River Road presentation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sai Sarpalit, Senior Transportation Planning Engineer at Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission.
I'm Jennifer Conley. I'm with BHP, and I am also here for the River Road presentation.
Hi, this is Daniel Peck from BHP as well.
Are there any adjustments to the agenda?
I have no adjustments.
Peter?
Just wanted to note that we have a few items that we've been considering standing items for COVID-19 pandemic. The Dumas Road, and also the anti-racism topics. And I was wondering if we could just...
They will be part of the town administrator's report. Hearing none other, let's move on to the public comment period. I'm going to do something different so that we can be fair and even and move through it quickly. I'm going to set my stopwatch for 2 minutes because I think that that's an adequate time to get the job done for anybody who's speaking. And I will not play the quiet music with 15 seconds left that they do at Academy Awards, but I will give a warning if it gets to 15 seconds before 2 minutes. So that said, I'm just trying this out to see how it works so that we can get not get bogged down. And public comment is meant to be just that. No discussion follows that, but it does become a part of the public record. And please introduce yourself by name before you make your public comment. Go ahead. Who wants to be first?
Chris? Hi, my name's Chris Bernier and I live in Underhill, and I am here because I'm interested in pedestrian access. I've been following the Underhill Flat Sidewalk project since it has been initiated. We live off of Route 15 and I'm a parent of two young kids and we regularly use Route 15 for pedestrian access. And I had since learned that there was going to be a presentation on River Road and pedestrian access, and I use that road often as both a runner and a cyclist, and I'm quite nervous about it. So I am here as an advocate for pedestrian access in and around Underhill, and I'm thankful that the town is embarking on both of those projects. One, Jim was gracious enough to get right back to me and say that the Underhill sidewalks, the flats project, should be done by next spring, and then happy to be a part, if I can, around the River Road project, if something were to happen there.
Thank you, Chris. Your comment is a part of the public record.
Just a quick clarification, if I may, please, just before it slips by. Chris, it won't be done by next spring. It's going out to bid this winter. It'll start next spring. So hopefully it'll be done next year. So that's the timeline on that.
Sorry, I'm cautious. I was a little too optimistic. Understood.
No, I think everybody's ready for it to happen, so it's understandable.
I have a public comment that was sent in, which is always an option for people, which I will read. And this is from Sandy and Roger Gillum, who were unable to be here on October 6th, but are requesting this statement to be read during the public comment section. So I will begin. We moved to Underhill in 1971, almost 50 years now. The population of the town then was less than 1,200. We raised our two sons here. Sandy served as an administrator at BRMS for 15 years, retiring in 2009. We love this community, which is why we are so disturbed by the recent attacks on town administrators and staff by Peter Duvall, newly elected select board member. It is our understanding that Peter has brought a lawsuit against the town and that this lawsuit has been going on for several years. We know nothing of the lawsuit. Peter Duvall may be justified. That is why we have courts. But we fear Peter Duvall's motivation to get on the select board had more to do with his desire to somehow get back at the town or get involved with governmental discussions regarding his lawsuit than it had to do with representing the town's interests. I understand it is his legal right to do so, but question the ethics of his decisions and activities. Many of the town staff have publicly complained of their being treated rudely, often in public. There are never circumstances, we repeat, never, when and where such spoken and written behaviors are appropriate. So we say two things to Selectman Peter Duvall. Always professionally comport yourself with others as if you were working with your grandmother, even if you did not like your grandmother. Number two, we find you not divulging your lawsuits with the town when you ask the citizenry to vote for you as disingenuous. Are there any other public comment? Moving on then to the first item on the agenda. Am I forgetting anything, Jim?
Just a quick reminder to folks, please try to mute yourself when you are not speaking. There's a caller on the line. Caller, I muted you just because we were getting feedback. Please don't take it personally. That's all. It just makes it difficult to hear if there's feedback. Thanks.
Thanks. Always a good announcement. Peter?
Jim, is the caller able to unmute themselves if they need to speak?
Yes.
How do we proceed on this first agenda item?
Well, I'll pass it over to Marshall. Marshall, if you'd like to introduce everyone and what's going on. We have a pretty comprehensive program here to present. And is it my screen that you'd like to share with the PowerPoint, or is someone else going to do that?
It'd be great if Jennifer Conley could be made the presenter. I believe you have the presentation up, Jen. Is that correct?
I do.
There you go, Jen. You're all set.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure thing.
I can just briefly, while Jen's getting this up, introduce this a bit. So the town applied for a planning grant through the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission about a little over a year ago. And through that program, we've contracted with VHB to take on this study to evaluate River Road, as well as Pleasant Valley and Iris Settlement Road for some road safety evaluation initiatives. I'll hand it over to Jen now. She's the project lead for VHB.
Great, thank you, Marshall. Can everyone see my screen okay?
Yes. Excellent.
Good, I'm seeing some nodding heads. That's wonderful. Again, I'm Jennifer Conley. Dan Peck is joining me on the call in case there are any technical questions that are in his area of expertise. But without any further ado, we're excited to be here and we'll get started right away. So the agenda for today is we're gonna jump right into River Road. Oh, and it didn't change pages. Why is that? There we go. We're going to jump right into River Road. I think that's an area that folks have a lot of interest in. We'll start on that, discuss the existing conditions, what we found out from the geotechnical investigation, and then talk about the alternatives and the recommendations on River Road. And then we'll touch on Iris Settlement and Pleasant Valley Roads, which it's a slightly different approach that we took there, really talking about deficiencies and areas of concern and what our recommendations are on those locations. So as far as River Road is concerned, we looked at River Road. It's about 2.1 miles long, and we looked at it from Park Street to Range Road. As I'm sure is no surprise to anyone here, it's a single lane in each direction. It's a narrow road. It ranges from about 22 to 23 feet in width. And I'm going to guess everyone on the call is familiar with the fact that there's been a little bit of rutting and cracking and some challenges that the town has faced on this roadway. So the project team took a site visit, and that was a number of folks from the town, as well as the CCRPC and VHB, and really identified a number of things that were happening on the road and a number of issues to flag for when we got to the geotechnical part of the study, but just identifying any of the lines that could be in conflict. And then we took a look at the drainage culverts and got some indication of where you were experiencing the pavement failures. And the visual inspection at that time showed the cracking, the pavement rutting in numerous locations. I will say at the time, I haven't been on in a while, actually you could even see the rutting and the cracking a little more clearly in Google Street View at that time, because it had shown it before. It had gotten a top coat of pavement and it was definitely quite apparent some of the issues that the town had concerns with. Then we had the geotechnical testing. Sanborn Head and Associates went and they took 12 borings. And what's important here is that they took borings along the 2 mile length of road, but also along the width of the road. So the borings were taken at different locations, not just along the edges of pavement where the worst challenges were being felt right now, but also in the middle of the road and in the middle of the lanes. And we can talk about a little bit more about that later when we get into our alternatives. The pavement depth was found to be between 5 and 8 inches, which seems fine. The bigger concern became with the subbase, which the depth ranged from a low of 8 inches, and there were a number of locations with a very minimal amount of that subbase, and at some locations up to 23 inches. And then the problem was there was a variation in the material type, and what was under the subbase in a number of locations was of concern and could be leading to some of the issues that the town was seeing. So the conclusions from the geotechnical professionals were that the freeze thaw cycles were affecting the content below the subbase, and that there was also non-structural organic materials that are located in the roadway and the subbase itself. And also that this roadway was reaching the end of its useful life, basically, that pavement has a life cycle and that you are approaching the end of that life cycle. So their recommendation was a full depth reconstruction down to a depth of 30 inches and perhaps deeper in some locations when inadequate soil locations were found below that point, that judgment would need to be made whether there needed to be a little more shoring up in certain locations. So we started to look at what the town's alternatives were. And the first one is what the town has been doing. I mean, as you all know, a mill and overlay. It maintains the current width of the road. It basically takes off kind of that top level of pavement and lays down a new one. It gives you a nice smooth surface to drive on. But I think what the reason the town pursued other alternatives is that this is only lasting a couple of years. And depending on that freeze-thaw cycle, just how bad our winters are, that could really be a very short-term solution. The cost of this type of approach is about $500,000 based on the V-Trans bid information for that entire length of the roadway. So that is an alternative. It's an alternative that the town has been doing, but I think the town is now considering whether another alternative would be appropriate. Alternative two is a full depth reclamation. And what this does is it can either keep the current width of the road, or you can look at a full depth widening kind of on either side to add bike lanes if you were interested. And we did cost estimates with and without the widening at this location. What this does is it really takes off the top levels of pavement and a couple inches of the subbase, and it uses some of those materials to kind of repack down into the subbase. What that does is it gives you a little bit more improvement over a mill and overlay, which is really just your top pavement layer, but without a full depth reconstruction cost. You're not fully bringing in all of that level of new material. So it does reduce some of your costs for materials. The total cost estimate for alternative two is $1.4 million if you keep that current 22 to 23 foot width of roadway, or $2.3 million if you start looking at adding 4 foot shoulders to accommodate cyclists. Alternative three was the full depth reconstruction. This was what was recommended by Sandboard Head, and VHB also thinks the full depth reconstruction is important. And that really does give you a full new roadway and a full new life cycle. We looked at a quote for that, either maintaining the 22 foot width or going out to a full 30 foot width. And those costs are shown here, either at $2.6 million if you aren't adding shoulders, or at $3.4 million if you are adding shoulders. One thing at this point that the town did ask us to do, and you know, we can get into if folks need additional information, was this obviously is a significant cost, and could this be broken into pieces? And one of the things that we did talk about is that obviously it can be broken into half-mile segments, and it can be done pieces at a time, and really concentrating on the areas where you're having the most challenges. The town is very creative and came up with kind of a modified option and really asked us about this modified option. And it's modified in two different ways. It is not a full 30 foot cross section because there are concerns about adjacent property owners, and maybe there is some widening that can be done to better accommodate a pedestrian or a cyclist on a paved shoulder, but without going the full, say, 30 foot cross section. So this cross section looks at about a 27 foot cross section, if I remember correctly, instead of a 30 foot. And what that does is it really, as I said, it still gives some accommodation, but perhaps not with as much impact. This alternative also looked at something creative. It said, if we're really seeing our most significant issues along the edge of pavement, is there something that we can do there by going a full depth reconstruction in the last couple of feet out and really kind of shore up those edges where we're already seeing our issue, but only go with a reclamation in the middle. So it's kind of a modified alternative. And this does end up saving money at $2.1 million. The challenge is with the roadway at the end of its life cycle that the center could begin to fail. And one of the things the town asked, though, is, you know, so where were those borings taken? And that was interesting information to take. A number of those borings were taken in the center of road or in the center of lanes. And this alternative, as it's shown, would only be doing a reclamation in those areas. So if you do have an area that does not have adequate subbase, it would continue to not have adequate subbase. And as a result, you could end up with a failure after you've done this project within a couple of years and really almost have to start over again. So this was a great creative idea, but it's not something that we would recommend as an alternative just based on those factors that I just mentioned. So then we looked at the modified cross-section with the full depth reconstruction. Again, the town is still very concerned, obviously, with the width impacts if you end up widening to a full 30 feet. So asked for a cost estimate, agreeing with looking at a full depth reconstruction, what would that cost with just a 27-foot cross-section? And that was this alternative five at about $2.6 million. Again, any of these alternatives, you could break into pieces to make it more palatable for funding, but this seems to be a compromise alternative. Now, one of the things that we did talk about at this point was whether the town wanted to evaluate different widths and whether some additional study about whether a full accommodation of a bicycle lane, you know, is appropriate, is necessary, and what those impacts would be is something that could be looked into further. Before I jump to the other roadways, do we want to have questions at this point? How does the chair feel about that, or is it better to wait till the end of the presentation?
I think that we could have some questions if they're specific to this project. Peter?
What is the AADT in along this river road?
The AADT is pretty low, and I apologize that I don't remember it off the top of my head, but I can certainly check on that and report back to you later in the meeting.
Yeah. Okay. And I'd also like to know the source as well, whether there was a recent study done.
Yes, I will double check that, but the source would have been VTrans data that was available for the corridor.
Okay,
we can look into that right now and get you an answer within the next minute or so.
Cool.
Great. Dan Steinbauer, I do have a question too. I had heard, and I don't know if this is true from your findings, that one of the reasons why the edges of the road degrade so quickly is because the road was actually built as a very narrow road, and then when it was widened, it wasn't done properly. So there is a lot of organic material, especially on the edges. Is there any truth to that, a bit of history?
Well, and that bit of history may be true, but I will say when I looked at the results by location, and actually maybe I will see right to that slide. I do have in the backup slides the chart, here it is, of the different locations. Let's see how I get this to show. I guess for now I'll just move it over and then I can move it back. So these were the different locations of the borings, and you can see they really varied by location. And even the one in the center line was one of the ones that only had 4.8 inches of pavement, whereas some of the ones in the shoulder had the 7.2 inches of pavement. So I'm not sure that really plays out. I found when I really looked at the information, you could see that it really varies significantly by location. So for example, boring two might have 8 inches of asphalt, but only 14 inches of the base course. And that's in the center of a travel lane. So it really isn't a consistent, the center of the road, it has a better subbase, a better base and subbase than the edges. That is not what we found.
Okay, thank you. Peter?
this is a question about the reclamation. That's just going to be the asphalt, I believe. Is it possible to reclaim and reprocess the subbase?
Yes, Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the assumption was that they would actually process and reclaim some of that subbase as well. And it's a, like, I believe it was 3 inches of new material into the subbase as well in that alternative. So it gets you a little bit of the way to where you need to go, and it shores up a few inches of subbase, but it doesn't give you that full, you know, couple of feet that you would truly want.
Can it be done to 30 inches or however deep you want to go?
Dan, do you want to comment on that? My guess is you would end up with
it's not really practical to do a reclamation to that depth. It's because it's more cost effective just to do a complete removal and put in new clean material. The reclamation process mixes and grinds the subbase material with the asphalt to create a solid consistent base course for your new pavement. Without going to the depths necessary for full depth reconstruction.
Can you separate the two processes of, you know, the pavement reclamation from the subbase reclamation?
The reclamation process itself is the grinding and the mixing of the asphalt and the subbase, partial subbase material to create the consistent compacted material. So they use a machine called what's called a BOMAG, and they go out, they basically grind the asphalt with some of the subbase material and compact it prior to putting in the new asphalt above.
Bob Stone, you have a question?
Thank you. Why did we stop at Range Road? Why didn't we continue all the way to Underhill Center there near Green Street to get the entire River Road?
I don't know that I know the answer to that question.
So yeah, we did the entire River Road. River Road is from Jericho Line to Browns River, and then it becomes Pleasant Valley, Bob. So the 2.2 miles of River Road is covered in its entirety.
That's not what was said, though. They said that they went from Range Road to the town line, and so I'm wondering why we missed from Range Road to Underhill Center to the park, basically right in front of the store. So why is there that missing piece?
That is Pleasant Valley Road. This is only River Road. We chose not to do Pleasant Valley, just River Road.
Correct. Pleasant Valley Road starts at the stop sign. River Road continues on until the stop sign. So it's right there at the store where Pleasant Valley and River Road come together. So my question again is, why did we miss that little piece of the road from Range Road to the stop sign?
It wasn't part of the scope. We didn't include that side of the bridge. It wasn't paved in that fashion, Bob. When we've last done the paving jobs, we've gone up to the Hummel Bridge, but not from there to the stop sign. That's classified as Pleasant Valley. I actually was not aware that was considered River Road from that stretch on. I've always considered River Road to the Hummel Bridge.
No.
But if I'm wrong, I stand corrected.
Okay.
Peter?
Is there a scoping document?
Yes. It was 2.2 miles from Jericho Town Line to the Browns River.
I'd be interested in seeing the scoping for these reports.
Yes?
And just to interject about the AADT, in our scoping report, we have from 2019 VTrans counts approximately 3,000 vehicles a day traveling through this section of River Road.
3,000 is a critical threshold in transportation planning. Was it more than 3,000 or less than 3,000?
There are two counts in 2019. One was just under about 2,900, and the other was just above 3,000. What is that threshold are you referring to?
I think there are a number of markings that become recommended at 3,000 ADT that are not necessarily recommended below that, and perhaps lane width changes. So where I'm headed is, what can we do for transportation demand management? Get the AADT below this threshold so we can use perhaps different different standards.
When was that study? What time of year was that study done?
Those traffic counts?
Correct.
I can tell you they were probably done during the summer months.
Metrons typically collect their data in the summer, but then they do normalize it to an AADT depending on when they count it and what their monthly factors, et cetera, are. So if they report it as an AADT, they've already done that normalization.
Okay, thank you.
I'm wondering if we can move on to the second part of the presentation so we don't get bogged down in a lot of detail. We'll be reviewing, is my guess.
Okay, and I apologize. There was an evaluation matrix that we had put together that just really summarizes that information that you folks can certainly take a look at. But it includes the life expectancy, the right of way property impacts, utility relocation where that might occur, bike accommodation, and then resulting cost estimate. And as I said, our recommendation was for that full depth reconstruction. But moving on to those safety enhancements for the local roads, for Pleasant Valley Road and for Irish Settlement Road. Both of the roads have numerous safety concerns. There's a number of places that there are sharp curves that don't have warning signs. There are blind driveways, and there are in some locations steep drop-offs adjacent to the road, and a lack of signage to indicate the presence of cyclists. So here are some of the statistics. In general, the two roads have speed limits that range from 30 to 45 mile an hour. They have a 3-rod right of way. There were very few natural resource concerns that were found. So in the event that the town does pursue any modifications to these roadways in the future, natural resources should not present too much of a challenge. The roadway width, depending on Pleasant Valley, was 24 feet, and on Irish Settlement Road varied between 20 and 24 feet. Some of the constraints that were present on both roadways were, some overgrowth of vegetation. There were blind driveways and a blind intersection, a steep slope, as I already mentioned, and then, a concern when you approach a reverse curve. So some of the solutions are some signage. There would be some thinning and trimming of certain areas where there is a hidden drive, a warning sign to indicate that. Locations where guardrail would be appropriate, and reverse curve warning signs. And of course, the report itself does identify each of the locations along those roadways where each of those items were noted, and the mileage marker that those items were noted, and the resulting mitigation factor. But I didn't think it served to kind of go through every single step of the roadway with you all. But if you have a particular question, happy to answer it. Okay, well, that is our presentation. Marshall and I are both available, whether for more questions now or if you want to contact us, our email address and our phone numbers are present up on the screen. And we look forward to any of the input.
Peter, you have a question?
Yeah, I'll just get back to the River Road then before Pleasant Valley. So we've been offered couple of different lifetimes for the road reconstruction, 2 to 5 years or 5 to 20 years. What would it take to to build a road that'll last, say, 100 years.
I think if you can figure out how to build a road that will last 100 years, V-Trans would really like to talk with you. Dan, you can certainly weigh in on this. I just think with how harsh our weather conditions are and freeze-thaw cycle, I think you end up in a situation where 100-year roads are very hard to come by.
Yeah, we probably have to be very thick and have some very good underdrain system to account for the freeze-thaw cycles that we have. Very well-drained subbase. Typical pavement and roadways are typically designed for 20 to 40 years, full-depth reconstruction, but the pavement's good for maybe 10 and the subbase is, we try to model it for 40, but it never really lasts that long.
The interstate's at least 50 years old. Seems like it's holding up pretty well. What did they do differently on the interstate?
They repave it very often. They have a very, very thick subbase material. It's probably four to four and a half feet deep, multiple layers. They have a sand cushion underneath, and they have a pretty beefy asphalt that's about 9 inches to 12 inches thick.
Moving on to the safety questions. One thing that caught my ear is this word lack. Anytime I hear lack, I think everybody should have their antenna up for solutions that are searching for problems. And I'm wondering if there's actually a problem with the signage. I mean, it seems like we've gone along pretty well with our dirt roads for a long time, our gravel roads, without a lot of sign clutter. And I'm just wondering if
That was definitely a concern that we heard from the town, is that some of the items, like a blind intersection, the way you address that, if you can, is to, if it is vegetation, you trim it. But if it is something like a vertical or horizontal curve that you can't mitigate the situation, then you use advanced warning signage. That certainly is something that the town can decide whether or not to implement. But, that is the mitigation, if you were to use that mitigation.
So I think the one thing that a lot of people are aware of is the intersection with Harvey Road. And I was wondering if you could talk specifically about that.
Could refer back, if you'd give me a moment, I can see if I can pull up that and see if I have a specific reference to Harvey Road and the mitigation that is recommended. If you just let me take a moment.
And I just did a quick search through the report, and I'm not coming up with any reference to Harvey Road, unfortunately.
Okay. Is Harvey Road one of the limited sightline locations?
Yes, it certainly is a sightline location, and we're working on alternatives to make it safer for people from Harvey Road pulling out onto Pleasant Valley Road.
I apologize. I've got too much going on trying to, having the presentation going and being connected to the meeting. My guess is in the mapping, I'll be able to see which location that is if I can get that open, or if maybe Dan can beat me to it. We'll see.
Yeah,
There are a number of references to hidden drives in the report. So I would be surprised if we didn't come across Harvey Road and just didn't call out Harvey Road.
A second, I've got those documents open now.
Looking at the map, it looks like the issue is vehicle. Looking to the left, there's poor sight lines because there's a crest of a hill.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, there are some options that could be done there. You could obviously the crest of that hill is probably not not conducive to the current roadway speeds that people are experiencing out there. So the options are to lower the profile of the road or to shift the intersection further away from that crest of the hill.
Yeah, we had a pretty extensive report on that, so I'm not sure we need to go through it with you since that wasn't on the radar.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't believe that we really looked at any of those high cost alternatives for those roadways. Just mainly looking at the low
you're
cost.
Looking for amelioration of some safety concerns. And that's what we're looking at too. We're, you know, evaluating, you know, a lot on that particular sightline issue. Is there anything else? How are we doing with schedule?
Well, as far as next steps in this project is if there is an interest in just having a preliminary design laid out onto the base mapping that we have for one of the alternatives. I think it was important that we come before you and speak to you about River Road and the different alternatives, because there are a number of things being considered here. Not just, you know, construction depth, but also the roadway width. And so to recreate a road on the current roadbed obviously has, you know, very little impact to adjoining properties. It really, the question becomes if the town is interested in laying out and seeing kind of what the impact would be of a 27-foot cross section or a 30-foot cross section, in understanding, you know, what are the goals for this road. And one of the things the CCRPC could help with is if you did need to, you know, go down a little further with scoping to see how you want to accommodate your bikes and pedestrians on this road, you can. But as far as our contract is concerned, we do still have a bit of budget available that if we did want to lay out one of these roadway widths and just talk a little bit about what those potential impacts could be, we could certainly do that.
Peter?
It's page 124 in the packet, by the way. Segment 6 of the Irish Settlement Road.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that's in Cambridge. Have you had any discussions with the town of Cambridge?
We have not.
Nope.
And okay. And then my next question is about maybe newer alternative approaches to safety, speed management, traffic calming. Is there any consideration to that? We've had a couple of people suggest converting Pleasant Valley Road from a through road to one that's not through.
Mm-hmm.
How would that affect traffic volume and speed and so forth?
That wasn't one of the things that we evaluated. In this case, it was more kind of what could the town kind of take on their own, and not a full evaluation of you know, that type of right. What could be a resulting impact on the adjacent streets. You know, that certainly is something. One of the things is, you know, one of the roadways, obviously being unpaved for a significant section of it, is its own form of traffic calming, honestly. And, you know, there aren't as many then potential alternatives to consider regarding traffic calming on a road that isn't paved. But certainly it's something that the town could consider, continue to look into and, you know, request help from CCRPC, looking into different alternatives if that is, you know, something that they would like to have looked at. But as far as what our scope was and what was, you know, originally applied for with the CCRPC was really just evaluating each of these roads for kind of, you know, signage, trimming, and other, you know, mitigating features to try to improve the safety.
Bob Stone.
Specifically as it relates to the River Road, the spread of cost ranges anywhere from $500,000 to almost four. In the ballpark of the different variables as far as the options that are available to the town. What is the typical, my vague understanding of how funding works, because this is a Class 2 road, because it connects both Route 15 and Route 108 as a through road. So funding available through V-Trans would be significantly better for the town versus a Class 3 or Class 4 road. Am I on my trail so far?
That rings true to me, but I bet your transportation committee can speak a little bit more to what they're able to obtain from V-Trans depending on the different roadway types.
So I guess the question may be better for Kurt, is that every 3 years we go after money from V-Trans for funding. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is the typical percentage that the state typically funds to the town for a Class 2 road?
So for a paving grant, simply paving, it's $175,000. And every 2 or 3 years, that's not an unreasonable expectation. With COVID, obviously things have changed a bit, but somewhere on the order of every 2 or 3 years and about $175,000 is the cap.
So with a
bike lanes would change that.
The bike lane would change that?
There is additional grant monies that could be obtained with the bike lanes, but we don't have a lot of specifics about how much we could get with that right now. Again, the COVID situation isn't helping matters.
Okay, so is it a fair assumption then to say that either $500,000 or close to $4 million at the most that we would ever get from the state of Vermont is this $175,000, and the rest would be the town's people to pay for it in their taxes? Is that fair?
So the $175,000 can come at every 2 or 3 years interval. Sometimes it can be back to back years. A while back, I had Brian, when he was the town administrator, give me a copy of, you know, the Chittenden County towns and how frequently they got paving grants and bridge grants and so forth. And so it varies depending on the circumstances. You know, this, as you point out, is a major connector between 108 and Route 15. So we could get better favorable conditions from the state for grants on this, assuming we come out of COVID in a fiscally reasonably strong situation for the state. It's hard to predict where they're going to be at going forward. So if you broke it up into several projects, you could get 175 times two times three. Yeah,
correct. Thank you. That answers my question.
Are there any other questions, or do we thank these good people for their very good report? And I did enjoy going through the packet and all of the diagrams and the numbers and the pictures, and very helpful.
Great. Well, as I said, Marshall and I are available if you do have additional comment, and definitely reach out to Marshall if you do want to pursue seeing what the layout of one of the alternatives ends up looking like.
Thank you very much. Good to meet you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks all. So Dan, the next item on the agenda is also under old business, and it's the sidewalk project. Old business. And I'm really happy to report that we received our permit in this past week, and that's great news. And so really we're in a position now where we can actually put this out to bid. There's not a whole lot to discuss. I just have to tell you about it, and we need to just set a timeline. And essentially what will happen is when we set our timeline, I will convey that back to VTrans, and they'll adjust the bid documents, and then those will be officially ready to go out. We have to have it out to bid for at least 3 weeks, and then we will set a date to review those bids. And I was hopeful that we might be able to get that done before the end of the year, so we set ourselves up for getting this going in the first part of next year. So that's essentially it. I'm trying to find the email just so I can, bear with me a sec here. So if I get them the dates that we wish to advertise, they'll review the updated big bid package. It'll take about a week or 2 weeks to formally authorize us to advertise. So if we do that tonight, I think we could probably have this go out to bid around November 1st and maybe run it, I don't know, maybe we run it for the full month of November, and then pick a date in December where we might like to review the packages. So that's my suggestion, certainly open to hearing yours. Is Cy still on or did he leave? No, Cy left.
I think it's an excellent suggestion to get this ball rolling. You need a motion from us then to authorize from the select board the commencement of the bidding.
I don't know if it's required, but I'll certainly take it. Any motions will be appreciated.
I'll make that motion. I'm Bob Stone, that we put out to bid the sidewalk project in the flats and solicit bids. Get that going.
I'm Dan Steinbauer, and I'll second that. Any discussion?
I'd like to have this wrapped up prior to the first of the year. I'd like to have the bids back and award the bids before. That would be my goal, is that I'd like to have this done before the first of the year so that we could start as soon as the frost is gone, whether that be May 1st or June 1st or whatever it is, you know, where we can get that going. But if there's prep that can be done before that, then so be it. But I really like to get that going.
Sure. Looking at the select board meeting schedule, December, our meetings are Tuesday the 1st, and that's probably a little too tight if we do it for the month of November. So we could tentatively pencil in Thursday the 17th of December to try to have this all nailed down, and we'll roll into the new year strong.
Peter Duvall, you had a question?
Yes. I'm curious about the budget implications. We had heard some concern from staff that capital budget was in trouble, and that was before the move to drain the reserves for the projects that were completed this summer. And I'm wondering how are our capital reserves, and how would this project affect them?
So this project is primarily funded by a grant. The town is required to come up with roughly 10%, and that money is in reserve and has been in reserve for quite some time. I double checked with Jen today, so we're all set. And it's in the fiscal year 2021 CIP, so we're good to go.
It is so designated. Waiting.
So patient. So when it's expended as anticipated, what will the balance be in the reserves?
It's not in the reserves. It is its own dedicated reserve amount. So there's $33,000 in that dedicated reserve for that project.
Okay, so we were told earlier that we should be putting off capital projects after.
This was a capital project that was already designated in the reserves.
Yes.
Its own reserve, so it's no need to put it off.
Okay. So. That's fine. I'm still not understanding how we could be very concerned about not having enough in the capital reserves, but still be able to spend money on this project.
Two different things. Apples and bananas. We have money set aside for this specific project, and it's waiting there. You know, the CIP is totally different.
All money is fungible.
Not in this case. This case is that you have money set aside specifically for this project. That's been, and people have been waiting a long time in the flats to get that project done.
I have seen sidewalk reserves.
I also understand that we had a pretty well established plan to borrow $750,000, and we didn't borrow up to that amount. So that there's a big chunk of money that we are talking about the reserves.
The regular reserves. We're talking about the sidewalk bid process. So I am ready to vote. Dan Steinbauer, I call the question to vote. Or I vote aye. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Hi, Dan, I just want to remind you that we have a rule in our rules of procedure that inhibits calling questions.
I misspoke at that time. I meant to, have the motion be voted on. So the opposed say nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it, 3-2-0. So we are on track for
point of information here. Someone send me this so-called rule that we can't call the question that Peter's referring to. If someone could send me a copy of that,
it's 6.2.
That'd be great.
Bob, it's rule of procedure 6.2.
Our rule 6.2?
Yes.
We may want to revisit 6.2 in the future and adjust that.
So we're ready for old business?
New business, and there is no new business on the table this week. We had a couple things that not under new business. We had a presentation that I was expecting to have from Green Mountain Transit tonight, and they had to cancel. So I was trying to keep the agenda manageable. So there's no new business to discuss.
Okay, then the town administrator's report.
Yes. So a few things here. The one thing I wanted to start with was last time when we met, we were talking about some requests I had received for using outdoor public space for various things. And I said I would come back and report back to you folks. My pressing concern was the request we had received from a resident around holding a Halloween trunk or treat event at Moore Park, which would essentially be people with their cars there and children going trunk to trunk and getting candy and so forth. So that was the most pressing. And then I had another where the ARC group was interested in handing out signs, Black Lives Matter signs and other social justice signs up at the Underhill Historic Schoolhouse. They decided to use a different spot, so that kind of went away. So with Sherry's help, I located we already have existing documents around use of public facilities in town, but that it does refer to buildings. So the town hall, the schoolhouse, stuff like that. So we don't really have anything around outdoor space. I wasn't really comfortable with trying to draft something quickly on the fly in between select board meetings to address the outdoor space thing. I think it's a bigger discussion. I'd like to discuss it with the rec committee. I'd like to look at a little bit of historical background as to how we've used those spaces, how folks have asked for it, et cetera. And really, I think that the thing that we need to be thinking about is how do we safely authorize use of those spaces with respect to COVID? And so in my mind, the best thing to do is always to defer to the experts. And in this case, I defer to the CDC. So I went to the CDC website and much to my surprise, well, I guess I don't know why I was surprised, but they have a whole page all about Halloween and about what is a good idea and what's not about what's not a good idea. And under their highest risk events, they do list these trunk or treat or trick or treat events, primarily because there's so much close contact and touching of things. And so I called that resident back and I told her, and I want everybody to listen very carefully to what I'm saying so I'm not misquoted later. I said that it was my sense that the select board would not approve that based on the CDC's guidelines. And so I suggested that she continue to look for a spot and that I would report back to her definitively after I brought it to the select board. But I also, I sent her to the CDC website to show her that information. And I just said that would be my recommendation to the select board is that we not approve that kind of event. I have heard through the grapevine that perhaps the church is going to host it now, which I respectfully will say I'm disappointed to hear, but I don't know that for a fact. But I don't think that the town should be involved in authorizing what CDC considers to be a high risk event. Questions?
On that, I agree. Dean?
Jim, can you send me the link to that page? Because we've had discussions at the rec committee about what we're going to do this year, if anything. Last year, we had a pretty successful pumpkin carving night. People lined up their pumpkins and everything. And we're pretty sure we can't do that this year. So we were thinking about people maybe just carving their pumpkins and bringing them down to Moore Park. But that would be helpful input. If you could send that to me, I'll pass that on to Anton or send it to both of us.
I'm going to put it in the side chat here and it's right there for you. You can go right to that page and they actually, they list carving or decorating pumpkins as a lower risk, depending on how you do it, and who's there and so forth. So.
Right. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Bob?
Yeah, I agree with Dan and Jim. I appreciate you being thorough on that. And I would dare to go as far as to instruct you to send a letter to the church and advise them of our decision and the reason why. And hopefully that they would stand with us by not hosting that type of event. Obviously, it's their business to do as they see fit, but I would encourage them to consider not hosting that type of event in the town of Underhill. And I would make that a motion.
I was also going to suggest that perhaps I put out a very polite Front Porch Forum post as well as social media posts, just articulating the town's position on this and perhaps helping people make decisions about lower risk activities around the holiday and direct them to this very page.
It's a wonderful idea.
Okay. If there's a motion for me to do that, I'll be happy to do that.
So moved, but and specifically to, I think that a letter should be sent to St. Thomas's Church.
To be clear, I want to confirm that that's actually been, that they are hosting it. That was something that I, you know, heard through the grapevine. So I want to confirm that that's actually happening. So I'll reach out and do a little bit of communication there.
And I would also say the other houses of worship in Underhill as well. So we have that in the United Church of Underhill that, you know, both would be, you know, making them known of our concern about hosting these type of events in the town of Underhill.
Okay.
A clarification, Bob, on your motion is that, I mean, we can't prohibit people from doing things. Even though they are against guidelines, but we can advise. I'm not sure the wording of your motion.
No, I think that I that's what I'm looking at, is to advise them of the town's thoughts on that. We would prefer that we follow the CDC guidelines, and that hope that they would encourage both religious organizations to try and follow those CDC guidelines.
I can certainly articulate the town's position on it, and to your point, Bob, sort of encourage that others follow suit. I do think that a united front around these kinds of things is important, especially from a public health perspective. So I'd be happy to do that.
And it certainly does, our weighing in on it certainly has some importance, because, I mean, we live in the same town. If we start having a virus spread in Underhill, they're going to look at things like that. So making a statement like that, I think is good. So the motion again is to affirm the CDC guidelines and advise that that the citizenry of the town follow the guidelines. Is that correct, Bob?
Yeah.
Peter, are you wanting to second that?
I'm ready for discussion.
I will second that so we can have discussion.
I was just wondering about the Vermont guidance, because there are some situations where Vermont's guidance on COVID-19 precautions is at variance from the CDC. So I just want to make sure that we're out of line with the state when we send out.
I think, Jim, you are getting that from the same source, correct?
I'm getting it from the CDC website. Just stand by. I'll have to look into it. I don't want to keep everybody here. I think we're getting into I'm going to hold my tongue. I think that I trust the CDC's recommendations around public health, and I think that COVID-19 is a potentially deadly virus. So personally, I err on the side of caution, but I'll be happy to research the Vermont guidelines as well. I would default to the CDC. The reason we have low incidence in Vermont is because we've been doing things well and taking precautions and following guidelines. So,
right. And that's one of the things that Vermont has done, is be more careful than the rest of the United States, mm-hmm. and done things a little bit more preventively than recommended by the CDC. But also, town is part of the state. It's not part of the United States. So
it makes, thank you, Peter.
You have some
quite a bit of sense.
Travis B.B. Woodard.
Hi, Dan. Thank you. This is Travis B.B. Woodard, Poke Hill Road. I would just offer that the general guidance that the CDC uses around approaching events like this is consistent with the state's guidance around physical distancing and lack of essential gathering. So I'm not certainly quoting guidelines that are posted on the Department of Health's website, but certainly the principles are the same. I would just offer that as a health professional.
Very good. Moving on to the motion, all in favor of this motion signify by saying aye. And for Donna's, even though we usually don't do that for divided responses, for Donna's benefit, if we say our names, Dan Steinbauer, aye.
Bob Stone, aye.
Peter Val, no.
Hearing the nays, we are, the motion is passed 2-1.
Moving on, just wanted to update you on the Homestead Acres speed study that is underway. They were supposed to be coming this, it's only Tuesday, so they're coming this week to install the speed sensors and some of the stuff that will actually conduct the speed study. That'll go on for about 7 to 10 days. I've communicated that to Randy Clark. He is kind of the de facto spokesperson for the neighborhood association. He's confirmed receipt of that, so that's underway. Nothing really to report other than that, then that's going on. Dumas Road, there's really no updates. I'm still waiting to hear from Brad on the boundary lines. He left me a message earlier yesterday, and I need to get back to him on that. So I want to move forward on that.
Can we get a comprehensive update on that? It's been a little while. Either have Brad be present or find yeah. out what is going on with that, because that's gone on for a little while now.
Yeah, agreed.
I say like July anyway, and here we are, you know, 3 months later, and I don't think we haven't heard what any progress has been made, and I'd like to know where we stand.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Bob, because I do have a deadline looming on that of November 6th, so I'm eager to move this along. So I will talk to Brad and request for some help from him at the next meeting. The Anti-Racism Coalition is, they did not make a formal appearance here this evening. They had a sign painting event last weekend, I think, and are distributing signs just, and you may see them popping up around town. Just a first kind of dip their toe in for a little community involvement, community event. I wasn't able to actually attend that, but it seems like it went well. To the more pertinent things with the select board, they are working on their, we had a meeting last week and I was pretty, what's the right word here? Blunt with them and said, you know, we've really got to have some stuff put together for the next meeting. And so I suggested that the focus be on the mission statement, on the response to the how to deal with road painting and residents complaining about road painting, although that has largely passed at this point. I'm not getting a lot of pushback on that anymore, but I still think it's something we tasked them with and it's important that they respond. And there was a third thing. Sandy, can you help me out? There's a third thing the group is going to work on for the next...
I think it had to do with a statement to the board about a definition of racism.
Hate speech. And hate speech. Yes, that's right. That's yeah. right. Thank you. So,
Donna's benefit, that is Sandy Gillum. Thank you, Sandy.
Welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. So that is the... just a sec, Bob, I see. So that's the three things that they've been, that they're working on. They will be at the next meeting. I also suggested that... that they really make it an effort, make an effort to always have a representative here to be able to, especially during public comment, to be able to be responsive and begin to fulfill that advisory role that they'd like to have. And so I sort of made it clear that you gotta actually step up and do that. So, so that's, it's going well for the group. It's a real nice group of folks, and I'm pleased to be their liaison. Bob.
Thank you for being the liaison, but I would like to add emphasis and highlight that we are owed a mission statement.
Yes.
And I do expect to see a mission statement by our next meeting.
Yes, that is the plan, and that is the number one priority that they have right now, is to put that mission statement together.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that before they do other activities in the town, it is... you know, good for them to be, you know, as an advisory board to the select board, that we know where they stand so that we can, you know, welcome them and defend them as we accept their mission statement.
Oh, Martha's here too. I'm sorry, I didn't see you there, Martha.
Peter?
Jim, how much time has this taken from your schedule, going to these meetings and being a liaison?
Well, most of it is on my own time, Peter, so it's really none of your business. And during the weekday in my job, 30 minutes a week.
You just said that you go to the meetings as the town liaison.
Yeah, they're after hours. Do you want to control my schedule too? Is that, do you know what I do after work every night?
Well, I'm just a little concerned about another situation where the town has a committee that is doing town work, but is not acting as a public body.
And they aren't a town committee, Peter. They're a freestanding committee with an advisory capacity to the select board. I serve as the liaison as the select board asked me to, and I participate as a town resident, which is my right.
These are just questions and concerns, Jim. What I would hope is that either that this group is outside the town, not staff.
Yeah, this is Martha Erickson. I'm a member of this group. We were just a group of people who came together with the hope that we would be able to do some education about anti-racism. And we are not a town committee. We were recognized by select board, which was wonderful. And, you know, as a town committee, there can be some missteps. I mean, not a town committee, as a group of people, there can be missteps. And, you know, being able to get a bunch of people together who are just working towards education and with good intent in their heart, we definitely have plans for going forward. And one of those plans does have to do with that mission statement, which we are inches from finishing.
Excellent. Thank you for that update, Martha.
I guess I would just caution the tone and the decorum of the staff and the members of the board. And I guess I would also caution the words committee, because this is not a committee. This is a group of individuals, and it's been fairly well publicized that anyone in the community, should they wish to participate in this group of like-minded individuals, is more than welcome to attend, to work out common goals and to present to the select board. So I don't recognize them as a town committee. I recognize them as a advisory group.
And I think there is a distinct difference. They are the Anti-Racism Coalition of Underhill.
This is Martha Erickson again. Can I talk about what you just said, Bob? It's, you know, in that it is a group of people wanting to keep it small. It's not really like going to be this gigantic herd of people that are coming together. We're actually with the intention of keeping it small and in some effect limiting numbers. So it's a misnomer to say that anybody is welcome to join it. And I don't know if that wasn't made clear, but it is in order to meet our goals that we are keeping it small intentionally. So I just want to make sure that that's not something that, you know, people misunderstand.
That is a misunderstanding of mine, because it was very well made clear to me that people from the community were going to be able to participate in this group. And if that is not the case, then I guess I will pause and wait for the mission statement to be made available for review and consideration moving forward.
Okay. It is definitely a group of all Underhill folks, but I hear what you're saying. And that mission statement's coming, I promise you.
Peter?
Yeah, I just want to contrast this ARC group with, say, the REC committee or the highway committee. These are public, the highway committee and the REC committee, these are public bodies that are part of the town. They don't have staff support. And I'm concerned that we're lending staff support to a non-town organization without the kinds of standards that apply to public bodies.
I'll just make one statement on that, that it's appropriate for Jim to be involved because the questions, you know, this anti-racism coalition group, I welcome it because I'm hoping that it will solve problems, not just the huge problem, but also the problems of communication within the town that's big enough in itself. And I know Jim has been the lightning rod of and Sherry of people who were at odds with some of the goings on in the town. And I believe that this coalition can be somewhat of a buffer. Maybe teach some people some things, because education, I know, is going to be a part of your mission statement that was talked about extensively. And you've got some great educators, you know, present there. And I'm interested in finding out, you know, how that can happen. But what other things are on your report?
Are we ready to move on?
Yep.
There's no real big updates around COVID. That's why it's been removed from the weekly or the meeting agenda as a recurring item. It falls under my reports now. The only thing I can report is that the, as I've reported before, the digitization grant was approved. Sherry and I have been working on that. She just went and got all the microfilm and sent it off for processing. We signed the agreement, so that's well underway. We're really excited about that. We're going to have digital records well back into the 90s now, as well as an online portal through our website, so folks can actually do their title search off-site and not even come into town hall, which is great. I think I mentioned that prior. And then the Elger grant also has been approved. I think last meeting when I spoke, I told you it was kind of pending, but it has been approved. So I've begun to first work on getting all of the year-to-date expenses through August 31st into the spreadsheet, and because I can send those in for consideration and processing now. And then I have up until mid-December to, I think it's the 11th, to do any of the new purchases that we'll be doing and getting those reimbursed. So I've already started working on those things as well, making those purchases. I have a technical assistance call into the CCRPC around a couple of the things that I'm a little unclear. I'm concerned that I don't want to make a purchase for something and then have the state say that it's not an acceptable use of the funds. So I'm really trying to dot that I and cross that T ahead of time and make sure that we're not going to have any trouble with those things. Prior to the purchasing. Many of them are very easy and just slam dunks, you know, laptops and remote working capabilities and stuff like that. All that stuff is going to be easily approved. So I'm working on that right now as well. So that's humming right along.
Peter?
Yeah, Jim, for the Elger grant, you didn't think that any ventilation equipment would be needed, but I'm wondering if you've considered getting some air purifiers as the winter approaches. And
yes.
Okay. Good.
Any other questions? Okay, the solar array tree cutting, this is the thing that just keeps coming back. I met with Don Toby today. Unfortunately, the crew that he had lined up was working in Jay, and they were coming down to Bolton, and they were supposed to come and stop here and do that cutting, which is why we were going to get a very favorable rate on that. But for whatever reason, the Jay job ran long, and the Bolton job was pressuring them to get down there, so they're already down in Bolton. So that window has sort of closed. So Don's checking back in with them. I had hoped I would hear from him today prior to this meeting. And if they're not available to do it, then he's going to help me find somebody else. There has been, Peter has repeatedly expressed some concern about whether or not this was approved or not. I went back and watched the video from that meeting. My understanding was the select board gave consensus for me to proceed with that. And we were purposefully, we didn't talk about dollar figures while we were on that in that meeting, because we weren't sure whether or not we were going to put it out to bid or not. which we're not required to do. And I had followed up with the select board meeting, the select board members subsequent to that meeting, and I had shared with you the amount, and you had approved informally, at least, that I was authorized to spend up to $3,500 to meet that contractual obligation. I would like to ask tonight that we have a motion and you codify that, so there's no more concern or wishy-washiness around that, and allow me to continue doing that. I am getting very concerned about the snow coming soon. I would really like to see this get done. We continue not to get lease payments as a result of not meeting our contractual obligations. So time is remains of the essence.
I will move that the tree cutting operation at the solar array be completed in order that it can continue to generate solar activity, not to exceed $3,500.
Second.
Is there discussion?
Yes. So the question, Jim, that I've asked at a meeting and by email is about this obligation. I can't find anywhere in the contract with Green Lantern that the town is obliged to cut down any trees, and I don't see any linkage to the lease payments either. So I've asked where in the contract is that?
Can you guys see my screen?
Email response from you to point that out. And so I'm wondering.
Can you folks see my screen?
Yes, I can.
Okay. You read here under item 7 here. We're going to go right here to where it says, owner agrees at its own expense to clear all trees and shrubs on its property that could cause shading of the solar facility if and when the solar facility receives permission for construction and operation. So that's the contractual obligation. The part about the lease payments was conveyed to me in an email. I will have to dig that out. There's a lot of email about the solar array. So I can do that, but that is what I was told by Green Lantern, is that until we are officially approved for commercial operations, which requires us to meet our contractual obligations, they will not make the lease payments.
So was that item 7 in the land lease?
That is item 7 in the option to lease agreement.
Okay, so the option was superseded by the lease, because I don't think I've seen the option, and we signed a land lease well after the option was put there.
Peter, I can assure you that this contract, before you were on the board, has been gone over repeatedly and vetted, and you know that ship has sailed.
Could you send me a copy of this
contract? And we're just doing what is obligated.
Can I get a copy of this option agreement, please?
All in favor of the motion to authorize the tree cutting? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Dan Steinbauer, aye.
Peter Duval, no.
Bob Stone and Dan Steinbauer say aye. Peter Duval says no. The ayes have it 2-1.
Last update I have for you is a sad one. We came in yesterday morning and discovered that the boiler had blown and there was water all over the floor of the utility room. And our aged boiler now needs a very costly repair. I believe Sherry told me it's in the neighborhood of $3,500 to $5,000. It's not really optional at this point because we will need to have heat. I would like to politely request the permission or direction or a motion from the select board to revisit, essentially reconnect with the energy committee and the folks that were working on that proposal, where we had the opportunity to have grant money to fund this, and just reopen that discussion and try to broker that discussion in a way and move that discussion along in a way that meets with everyone's approval, so that we can have a longer term strategy for fixing the heat, removing the buried oil tank, and so on and so forth. Because I think it's really unfortunate now that we're going to waste $5,000 on a repair of a 20 plus year old boiler.
Do we know specifically what is wrong with the boiler?
So is Sherry still here? I was not here yesterday afternoon when the service call came in. I'm going to do my best to tell you, Bob, but it sounds like there's 6 chambers inside the, are you there, Sherry?
I am.
Okay, can you explain the thing that's wrong with the boiler? You said there's the 6 chambers.
So there's 6 chambers within the boiler, and one of the seals or the gaskets around that chamber has failed. And one or two more are starting to loosen as well. So the contractor came in, looked at it, and suggested that we get the kit to replace all of them. And so just clear about how much that would cost, you not to $500. He's thinking labor, 2 men, 16 hours, $100 an hour. So we're looking about $3,000, but he was really unclear. They were going to give me an estimate by the end of the week. It will continue to leak until we fix it.
I'm not interested in the putting any more money into that boiler. I think it's gone to its useful lifespan. And I'm not interested in having the energy committee divert a lot of time into this project, and we are getting close to requiring heat for a building. So I would be interested in hearing from the energy committee if they have a very short timeline to report back to the select board and have an emergency meeting. But I'm hoping that we would be able to look at some alternatives to oil, you know, possibly propane, and get a comparison as far as how much an installation of a new boiler and taking out the old boiler will cost. And we can subsequently address the buried oil tank later. But we need to move quickly on, in my opinion, we need to move quickly on replacing that boiler.
So, Bob, I have a whole folder about this project from when they started it a while back, and I do have a one-page summary sheet that they provided to me. So essentially, the cost of the new boiler is around $11,000. Obviously, we'll update all of this and come back and report it more formally, but I just so you know, that was the cost for the propane installation, was around $11,000. And I would certainly concur that rather than waste $5,000 on an aged thing, I'd put that towards that.
I would be leaning that way, that if we're at the point where we're going to be putting almost half the cost of a new boiler into repairing this one, and then still wondering when it's going to fail again, it just doesn't seem like, it's one of those age-old questions where you have to decide, you know, when the transmission goes in your car, do I fix the transmission or do I start shopping for a new car, you know, type of thing. And I think we're at that point where we're ready to shop for a new car or shop for a new boiler.
Jim, do you need a motion so that you can feel free to go ahead and utilize what the Energy Committee has to offer and other options so that you can present that to us quickly?
Again, I'm not always sure what requires a motion or not. I'm certainly, if you all agree that I can go back to, you know, I'll reach out to Rick and Peter primarily and just kind of rekindle this discussion and see if we can put something together on a quick timeline. It shouldn't be a problem. All the research is there. So. And we can certainly, Bob, to your point, we can stagger some of the project. We could probably take that oil tank out in the spring. I might suggest that we pump it out this winter, maybe use the oil elsewhere if we can. So, Dan, I'm going to defer to you. If you think I need a motion, then by all means, make a motion. But that'll be my plan. Tomorrow's I'll reach out.
We aren't voting on any money right now. So
no.
I certainly want you to utilize the energy committee's expertise and also, you know, go about seeing what the options are.
Okay.
I'd like to know within a week though, Jim.
Yeah.
We, you know, I don't want to delay and, you know, have to worry about the building freezing up either. We've got an election that's going to be coming up. And this is really poor timing for, there's never a good time to lose a refrigerator, a freezer, or a furnace, you know, type
agreed.
Of thing.
Agreed.
We need to move quickly.
It'll be my top priority starting tomorrow morning.
Hey, Jim.
Yes.
After they did the minor repair yesterday, is it still leaking today? Because there was a lot of water, and I'm concerned that if we do need it over the next few weeks, if it leaks on us, we need to have a plan for a dehumidifier or something, I'm guessing.
There is a dehumidifier in that room. Sorry, go.
I spoke to the gentleman yesterday about that. He's created a barrier around the bottom. It will continue to leak until the repair is complete. He saw no reason for us to not run the furnace, but just suggested that we get the fix on it as soon as we could. It will drain into the drain. He did unclog the drain.
And we do have the heat pump here in the downstairs, so at the very least we can, if it was so cold, that we could at least heat this part of the building. But I realize there's probably considerations around pipes and so forth, so I don't want to rely on that.
He assured us that we would be fine for this until we figure out what to do with one Jason 6.
Peter?
Heating systems are usually annually maintained and inspected, and I'm wondering if this was part of, or this was a was noted in the last inspection.
They do come in annually and clean the furnace, but I don't know that you can't really take the furnace apart to check it.
I mean, that's getting into like the differences of the level of the inspection. I mean, I went there when this was first talked about, and they had the inspection done on December 15th, 2019. So from, and that was to measure the flue gas temperatures, you know, for CO and everything like that. So they were there looking at this thing in December of 2019. So from that point, you know, something happened, and Alliance Mechanical is the one that looked at it.
I'm sitting right kidding. Here next to a plumber. Hold on a minute, you guys. I'm sitting right next here to Mike, who's a master plumber. Let me have him explain what happens during an inspection.
So when you do a chamber inspection, what you're doing is you're pulling out the gun, you're looking at the end of the gun, making sure the nozzles and the electrode are fine. You look inside the chamber and make sure there's not any over-firing of the chamber and the target wall. So what has failed is a oakum rope that is between the chambers. There's no visual inspection because you have literally steel plates that are up against each other with rope in between the chambers, for lack of a better term, and you cannot physically see it. All you do is you look for moisture on the inside and the outside, and there is really, it goes from perfectly fine to failed catastrophically basically overnight. You really can't tell. It's the age of the metal as it expands and contracts that weakens this over time, and yours is 20 years old, which is not uncommon. So that's really what happens to a lot of these.
That's it.
So it sounds like I'm going to get busy on this tomorrow, and I will report back to the select board. And if we need to have a special meeting to review those things, we will proceed accordingly. Is that agreeable? Dan, you're muted.
Meanwhile, you can just send us an email at that, you know, what the options are.
Sure. Yep.
Or what you're learning, if there's anything new, and then we certainly could if we need to approve something, time is of the essence.
Yes, for sure.
And we need three bids because it's over $5,000.
Okay, I believe so. Okay.
Let's try to compare apples to apples. That if we're gonna look at a, you know, whatever 100,000 BTU, you know, oil fired or propane fired, you know, boiler, you know, that's try to compare the apples to apples when we get a comparison.
Agreed. That's everything on my list. Any questions?
Yeah, one last thing about that boiler thing. My memory is not as sharp as it used to be, but I think I recall that they mentioned that one of the zones upstairs was also not working properly or had failed completely.
I think it was referring to those cabinet heaters upstairs that had failed, and those I believe were forced hot water with a fan inside. So I believe both of those are non-functioning.
So I would, if we're going to address this, you know, phase one of that project would be, in my opinion, would be replace the boiler. Phase two would be, you know, take care of those box, whatever, you know, in the meeting. And then phase three would be for the removal of the tank.
Okay. I'll ask them to bid it out. Go ahead.
Okay, are we ready to go on to warrants and minutes? I move that the warrants for presented on this date be approved. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion, any questions on the any of the warrants? As Jennifer is here. Peter?
On page 136. Maybe this is something that I might have noticed earlier in earlier meetings, but I noticed that now that the check numbers are out of sequence on the bottom two lines. There's a check number 20323, and then it's check number 3160. Is there more than one checkbook?
This is Jennifer. We have one checkbook, but I'm not looking at the warrant right now because I don't have that in front of me. But if there was a direct payment through electronic fund transfer that occurred at the same time, it would appear with a different number.
Is that what the E stands for?
Yes.
Okay. And then on the same page, halfway up, U.S. Bank, $33,548.68, principal and interest. Can you explain that? Because that I would have guessed that when we pay off a loan or a bond, that it's, you know, the last payment is just a residual amount of, you know, $100 or something.
I believe that was the last payment of the bond, and it was principal and interest. It was the final payment. I don't have that in front of me, so.
Jen, do you want me to put it up on the screen? Would that be helpful?
Well, I know what the payment was for. It was, but I don't have the backup that shows the
gotcha.
The whole breakdown of the schedule of payments. We have an amortization schedule in the file cabinet that shows each year when the payment is made, how much principal, how much interest, and how many payments there are, and that was the scheduled payment for this year.
Is that the last payment?
I believe it is, but I'll have to double check that.
So we're ready to vote. All in favor of approving the warrant, signify by saying aye.
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 Nays? Hearing none, the ayes have it. 3-0. Minutes. It seems like we have three meetings.
Motion that we accept the minutes as presented.
I think that we have to do that separately, and I was looking for the dates to do that.
All right, the oldest one first.
I was hoping
September 1st is the first.
September 1st. I second that. Discussion?
Yes, at the last meeting, we put this one off. Because I would like to propose amendments that provide a little bit more detail on the charges. And I'd just like to let this one go until I can get to that. It's a challenge. That if it was easy, Lori would have handled it the first time, I'm sure. It's been quite busy this harvest season. So I hope we could hold off on this and can improve the other ones, but there's no rush to approve minutes.
Actually, I did review that, and I don't know what you're talking about. The minutes are not, I'm not putting down their importance, but they are supplemental to the recording of the meeting. And the only thing that we're voting on is this a accurate rendition of what the meeting was about. And I think we're, overblowing that a bit.
Lori, just a point of clarification, Lori did go back through those minutes and try to flesh some more things out. It was her understanding that Peter was going to submit some specific requests and some specific guidance around that, and that did not happen. So she asked me, and I said, well, do what you think is right, and we'll represent it. So these are amended minutes from the last time you saw them.
So all in favor of receiving the minutes and approving them for September 1st with any changes that were made, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Dan Steinbauer, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nays? I'm sorry, Peter, did you say nay or did you say aye?
Aye.
You said aye. No nays. The ayes have it 3-0. The minutes for September 1st are approved. What's the next date?
The 21st.
I move September. That we approve the minutes for the 21st of September. And that was also a regularly scheduled select board meeting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes for September 21st, signify by saying aye.
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 Bob Stone, aye.
Peter Duval, aye.
Dan Steinbauer, aye. Nays, hearing none, the ayes have it 3-0. And the special, very brief meeting, that was, what's the date on that one?
September 28th.
I move that we accept the minutes for the meeting on September 28th. With any corrections that we make? Second?
Second.
Discussion on that meeting? Peter?
On the first page. Refers to me as selectman Peter Duval. That's kind of archaic language. I think it would be better read as select board member.
Any other corrections? All in favor of approving these minutes with that correction, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Bob Stone, aye.
Peter Duval, aye.
Nays, hearing none, the ayes have it 3-0.
So I think we're on to correspondence, Dan.
Okay.
And I will walk you through the items in your packet. Again, most of these are pretty self-explanatory. The first you'll see there is an email and then a report from the CCRPC from Dan Albrecht. And it is a report, it's the 2019 report that is on the All Hazards Mitigation Plan. And that was something we were quite behind on getting to them. That kind of was one of those things that after Brian left and then Brad was here and then I came on board, it had been tabled. So finally got that done with Nate's help and Brad's help, and that has been submitted. So they're just essentially providing that back to us. If there's no questions. The next thing is I received an email from the CCRPC. Doesn't look like I put the email here, but it doesn't really matter. It wasn't really anything other than saying that they're doing this thing. They are trying to document any racial equity efforts in Chittenden County. And you may see the grid there that they provided. We haven't done a lot of those things at this point. And I planned on sharing this with the ARC group, mostly as an informative kind of gesture so they can see the kinds of things that the county-wide efforts are looking for. And I kind of wanted to flip it back to you guys and say, how do you want to proceed with this? I can fill it out from the town's perspective, what we've done, which is virtually nothing. And if we wish to, because the ARC group is a standalone group and not a town committee, some of these things we couldn't really respond on behalf of the town per se. I could also clarify with the CCRPC as to whether or not they would consider that as being applicable, even though it's not under the umbrella of the town per se, that there are people in the town who are doing these things. So just thought I would float that out to you guys for some guidance.
I'd be interested to know what they think is applicable if you tell them what we're doing.
Okay. I will then plan to discuss that with them at the next meeting of the ARC group. I'm hopeful that it'll actually give them a little bit of framework as well to work with.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing in your packet there is just, it was informative. We talked about this last time. It had been requested that I reach out to the Chittenden County Sheriff's Office and get a copy of their fair and impartial policing policy. It's largely boilerplate used across different agencies. I provided that there for you. I've also provided it to ARC. We discussed a little bit at the last meeting, but that's there for your information. And there is a letter. Oh, Peter?
I'm interested in finding out about the actual activity that the sheriff's department does in Underhill, and finding out, number of stops, that sort of thing, number of tickets issued, locations perhaps. And I think it would be good for us to evaluate the effectiveness of the traffic enforcement activity that we think they're doing. It appears to not be effective. And the evidence for that is a great number of yard signs around town. So I was kind of hoping that we would get a representative from the sheriff's department to come and give a little presentation on what they do, how they do it, and how they measure how effective they are at what they're doing.
So the select board, sheriff's department provides us with a list monthly of all of the stops. It cites the infraction, where it was, the violation, whether or not it was a ticket or a warning, the amount of the amount of the fine and stuff like that. And they have just recently added racial group as another category, which is nice that we can see that now as well. If the select board would like to see that, I can certainly. It goes to Jen, actually, because it's all part of the billing. I'd be happy to pull together, a few months of that if you'd like, if I'm directed to do so. And beyond that, if you'd like me to coordinate something with the sheriff's department, I don't know whether or not you'd want to review those things first and then have them come, or.
Yeah, I think reviewing them might help. We may decide that we don't need to have them come, but I'd like to see them as well. And by seeing them and by seeing the locations, we might give them some directive as to where to go. I know they probably ask anyway, but Jen?
I'll reach out to them tomorrow and ask them to compile. What we get is on a month-by-month basis. So what I'll do is I'll ask them to compile a summary for me since the beginning of the fiscal year, since July 1, which will give you, maybe three months worth. If you want more than that, I can have them go back probably further.
That's an excellent start.
And an end of the year summary that we just did. Haven't had access to.
I didn't hear what you were requesting.
Well, I'm just wondering if they, as part of their own internal operations, make an annual report that analyzes what they're doing.
I will ask them if they have any reports or if they can give us a summary of perhaps the last fiscal year summary and also this fiscal year to date.
Perfect.
We all set there?
Yeah.
Okay. So I will plan to include that in your next select board meeting packet. And if you want me to put that on as an agenda item to discuss, we can. And then it sounds like you want to discuss it at the next meeting. And then if you decide you want to have a representative, I'll make that request. Am I understanding correctly?
That's what I understand.
Okay. The next item in the packet was a letter from David Demarest that was submitted to me on the 21st. It was the same day as the select board meeting, so it did not go into your select board correspondence packet. And I did respond to David, and we went back and forth, and I explained that it needs to be here 72 hours in advance and so forth. And so he just asked that I please include it in this particular packet. I believe that he was hoping that it would be included as part of the hearing itself, but I let him know, based on what the attorney informed me, that that isn't something that gets included just by the nature of it being submitted. And perhaps, Dan, you can speak better to that.
That is correct.
Okay. And
before we move on, to be proactive, maybe something should go out in Front Porch Forum or some type of, you know, publication that says that, you know, if people want to have something on the record, that they should submit their, you know, record 72 hours prior to or attend our, you know, select board meeting, you know, when we hold them.
Do you mean in general?
Yeah, just in general. It's just like, this isn't just because, you know, right, who the individual is. This is, you know, we are going to call the strike zone the same regardless of who it is that, you know, here's the deal. You know, we need to have this stuff 72 hours so that we can all look at it before. You can't, you know, just send it in on the eve of the meeting and expect that it's going to be read into the record.
That is explicitly articulated on the website, on the select board page, that things need to be submitted. There's a whole form. If someone technically, if they want to come be on the select board, they can fill out the form. They can also just reach out to me directly, but any materials are also requested to be there for 72 hours in advance, but I'm happy to publicize that.
Yeah, I would just to be proactive.
Okay. I can do that. I'll do that with the next warning.
Peter?
The public comment that you read at the beginning of this meeting was emailed to the chair of the select board, I assume, but I didn't receive a copy of that by email myself, and I'm wondering about correspondence to the board making it.
It was actually emailed to me, Peter.
Oh. Is there a reason why it's not in the packet?
Because it was emailed yesterday, and it was not correspondence per se. It was a request explicitly requested to be read as public comment because Sandy and Roger were not able to be there for that.
Yeah, this is Sandy. That's correct. Roger actually wrote the email from both of us to be from both of us, and we weren't able to be during the public comment section, so I asked that it be read during that time period.
And I think the difference
read it yesterday.
And the difference is that Sandy and Roger were making public comment, and Mr. Demarest was asking to have that included as something or submitted as something as part of the hearing. And so essentially what he's done now is he's submitted something that is included in public record. And he did make a public comment during that hearing as well.
The email came to the town hall, not to me. And the option of reading that is by the town administrator or the chair of the select board. And I felt that it was more appropriate to leave Jim out of that, given that he was a part of the town hall staff that registered the complaints. I was just playing a perfunctory role, not that the communication was coming directly to me.
And that's because I couldn't find Dan's email address, or I would have sent it directly to you, Dan.
Well, that's okay, because it should go to the select board, and I would have forwarded it to them. So whatever you did, it worked. Thanks for your concern.
I'd like to receive a copy.
That certainly can be done.
And I'd like to receive a copy of the PowerPoint presentation.
That is a part of the testimony, as I outlined in an email. And it was a testimony that we heard, but it is not available to any of us until the hearing is complete and the you know, the 7-day window where you, Peter, and Jim, as the complainant, will give a summary to Bob and I, and then it becomes a part of our deliberation. But it's not a part of you know, what you can have or what we can have at this point in the hearing. It was delivered, we received it, and that is it. And obviously we wanted to have the hearing, you know, completed so that, but we did not, but we were planning to complete it soon. So then, you know, we will be able to move on.
Dan, how are you crafting?
Those aren't my rules.
This hearing that's been happening.
What was your question?
How are you going about crafting the rules for this hearing?
I am getting legal counsel. And that's all I'm going to say about that because we're not getting into the hearing. We have one scheduled in order to complete it.
Can we move on?
Yes.
The last items in the correspondence are just from Andrew. There's an access permit memorandum and then an access permit and then also a certification of notification and some accompanying documentation. And that's everything that is in the correspondence.
Okay. Schedule or announcement?
Hold on. I'd like to have a memo sent out to all department heads and all committees of the town. I noticed during the warrants and minutes that Conservation Committee picked up something at Lowe's that we paid for, and I noticed that we paid tax on that. And I think that we need to send a memo out to all the department heads and everything like that, that you know, they need to get either access to an account where we already have an account already established, or work with Sherry or Jennifer so that we do not incur taxes as it relates to purchasing items, that, you know, tax will not be, you know, reimbursed going forward. And if that needs to be a policy, then I would certainly encourage, you know, working towards that. But I do not like the idea that the town of Underhill is compensating people for taxes that are incurred when we were tax exempt.
That seems fine. I'll work with Sherry and Jen on that. I think that's it.
Yeah.
So we were moving on to the scheduling. There's three items there. The first two don't require any action. The third is, I had mentioned that the 11-3, the November 3rd select board meeting is actually on election day. And I was suggesting, I certainly won't be able to be there. So I was suggesting that perhaps we move that proactively.
I want to suggest Monday night. Think we can do that?
I would respectfully ask if maybe we could do it after Election Day, only because I will work from, you know, 6:30 to probably 10 p.m. or later on Election Day. So I would like to be home in bed Monday night. And given our four-hour meetings lately, yeah, I think I might prefer to punt that.
Well, I'm looking at my calendar here. I'm fairly, you know, wide open that week. It would get really close to the next regularly scheduled select board meeting.
The one thing I would point out, Dan, is that we have a select board meeting on November 19th, and then the following week is the Thanksgiving holiday, so it's a fairly abbreviated week, so not a whole lot's going to happen. So it might actually not be the worst thing if that I'm sorry, I'm looking at December. Never mind. Scratch that. Do you want to do Wednesday the 4th or Thursday the 5th?
I could do Wednesday the 4th. I'm not sure about 4 o'clock, but probably do 6. I could probably do 4. That schedule that I had.
That's fine. Either time would work for me.
I would vote for 4.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to have an earlier meeting. That way people who are on the agenda can come during their work hours. So can we do a consensus at a meeting on the Wednesday at 4? And that's the 4th of November.
Works for me.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. That's it. We have 2 items for executive session. So if there's nothing else, then I will request that anyone who is not going to be in executive session log off here. I will, if folks don't log off, I will respectfully boot you off. I'm going to take Mount Mansfield Community Television offline as well. And our first executive session item is regarding personnel and labor relations. So Dean's here for that. And just so you know, I've been texting with our town attorney because I've been telling him when he'll be needing to log in. So I'm just going to give him another heads up that we're probably 10, 15 minutes away from him
to do that. Before we boot MMC TV off, I will make the motions.
Okay.
I move that we enter executive session under 1 VSA 313A1B, where premature general public knowledge would clearly place the public body or person involved in substantial advantage regarding labor relations agreements with the employees. And also I move that we for 1 VSA 313A1F, confidential attorney-client communications made for the purpose of providing professional legal service to the body. Is there a second to that motion that encapsulates the 2 items for our executive session?
Second, Bob Stone.
Is there any discussion? Do we need to have any discussion, Peter?
It's not clear to me what the purposes of these executive sessions, but I'm also wanted to ask about recording the public session after the executive sessions are over. That is an obligation of the remote meeting.
We've been doing that.
And I'm just wondering, what's happening to make sure that that happens?
I press record and it gets recorded and then it gets stitched together.
Perfect.
Okay. All in favor?
Who's aye. Who's against? Involved? Executive May. Session.
Hearing none, the ayes have it 3-0. We can stop recording.
So,
do you want to make a motion, Bob? You said that you wanted to do that?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that the town of Underhill hire John Klesch's law firm to send a notice to the town of Cambridge advising them of our interest in the Butler Road area pursuant to Title 19, 771C. And that our interest may also include the continuation of a trail that would continue from Butler Road into the town of Cambridge.
I would second that. Discussion?
I'd also like to see a date and time to be determined later that the select board make a site visit to the area in question so that we have a better understanding of the area.
Right. I agree.
I'd be
a part of the motion. But
a joint meeting with the select board in Cambridge to discuss trails in general.
I think a site visit would be first by us, just to see.
I'm not opposed to that, Peter. I just think that we ought to get the lay of the land first, and then we can have more of an intelligent conversation.
What we're talking about.
Right.
So it's been moved and second. Is all in favor of this motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it 3-0.
Thank you so much, John, for being on standby and chiming in this evening.
My pleasure. I guess what I'll do is work on a draft and send it to Jim to have a look all with you, circulate it out to you, and see if it meets the intent of the motion. Does that sound reasonable?
Perfect.
Okay. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.